Here we go. We starting off the parsha. Parsha Bahar. Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemor. Hashem spoke to Moshe on Har Sinai, saying the following. He said, "Speak to Bnei Yisrael. When you go to the land, you're going to keep Shemitah. You're going to have this concept of Shemitah." Chassam Sofer quotes on Rashi. Rashi says the famous line, "Ma inyan Shemitah itzel Har Sinai." What is Shemitah? Keeping the seventh year of the land fallow and not working on the land like this year is, like this year being Shemitah. What is that? What does that have to do with Har Sinai? You know, what's the comparison between that and Har Sinai? Why Sinai? Does anybody know why it's called Har Sinai? Why we call it Har Sinai? Anybody know why it's called that way?
Does it have something to do with Gematria?
You know, nothing to do with Gematria. It could, though. It could.
How do you spell Sinai? Sinai with a head.
What does Sayin, Sin Yud, Samach Yud, Nun Yud? What does Sinai mean? That's another good question. Well, pick a word that sounds somewhat like it. Chazal say it means Sina, as in hatred. Hatred. You know why?
Sina.
Because Sina. Sina. The hatred is because when the Jews got the Torah, the other nations started to hate them. There was some type of a hatred that was brought up against the Jews, and that hatred was brought to them, a crazy hatred, was brought to them because we ended up keeping those mitzvahs. Why? The mitzvahs separated us. The mitzvahs kept us far away from the other nations. The other nations realized that they're now far away from us, and they have nothing to do with us, and therefore they hate us for it. They hate us for it. But it goes the opposite way as well. It goes the opposite way as well. Because we had Har Sinai, we started to hate their laws. When they started making laws, there's a lot of hatred toward those laws because we're already keeping 613 mitzvahs. Well, we have to keep your laws as well, which was why you'll find naturally, says the Chassam Sofer, many Jews will go against the government. Many Jews will not pay their taxes. Many Jews will go ahead and do this and do that. Why? We already got enough laws. We got our laws from God. We have to follow your laws as well. We have to do yours as well. It's not right. It's halachically incorrect. Dina Malchus Dina is still a halacha from the Torah. That you still have to keep the laws of the land and obviously not make a chilul Hashem at all. But the fact is, that's why we hate it. There's a sina that they have to us because we became the chosen nation and they didn't get chosen as the nation, as the number one nation. There's a hatred from us to them. We can't stand their decisions. Their laws are not for us to be able to keep. That's a different, two different things. But that's also, we're Polish from them. We separate from them a little bit. Jews always live in the ghetto. They always used to live in the ghettos. Now we're like in the affluent neighborhoods and we're around and we have these people around and those people around. But we're always a little bit separated from everybody else. We stick together. We stick together. We're Polish together. Yes, sort of. By the way, we stick together. That's also why it's called Sinai. Sinai is also Lashon Sneh. The Sneh meant what? What was the Sneh? You guys know this from Moshe Rabbeinu. What's that? The burning bush. A burning bush was referring to a type of a bush that was only in the deserts. It was a sneh. It was a bush that you could only find in places where nobody else was, where uninhabitable lands. That's where a sneh would be. It was like a thorn bush with nobody else around there. Sinai was not only for sinah, it also stood for sneh. It kept us far away from the other nations. It kept us as far away as we could possibly go. It was as if we're in the middle of the desert. That is a little bit of a lesson for the Torah, by the way. In order, well, in a way, in order to keep the Torah, the easier it is for us if we stay farther away from them. When we're with them, we sort of like follow in their ways. We do what they're doing. It's kind of hard for us not to. But when you're away from them, then you have a possibility of actually doing what the Torah says. No, because we still have Eretz Yisrael. And for some reason, everywhere we go, people join us. People come with us. You'll notice, I mean, this neighborhood, this ridiculous neighborhood. The houses are not that big. The lawns are not that great. You know, the backyards are not that great and everything. But for some reason, everyone wants to live here. And the property values, along with the rest of the world, obviously, but the property values here have doubled and tripled. Especially between Tui and Pratt, where all the Jews are. Everybody wants to live in that area. It's not just Jews want to live there. Whenever a house goes up, there's always 30 people going for that house. 30 people going in that market and everything like that. It's a little bit different. 100%, yeah, but it's still. But still. Either way, that's the point. That's the point. Well, there's a reason for that. I don't want to be Jewish. But either way. Oh, I forgot that I put this on tape. I mean, I love being around all these Jews and everything's all good. Just so we know. If someone has a bad fever, you know what the Gemara in Shabbos says what for him to do?
Now, to learn.
Yeah. Learn. One of them says about a fever, the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Samazayin does say that you should take a chicken, cut it up into little pieces, shave your head in the middle, put the pieces down in the middle, and then pour water on top of it. You'll be fine. I guarantee you, when you do that, you will be absolutely fine. Yeah, Motrin is somewhat similar to the dead chicken being put on your head. Somewhat similar. But the Gemara says you should do this. If you have a bad fever, go to a sneh, go to a bush, a thorn bush, and say the following. Vasne boer boish, vasne einenu ukol. The burning bush was burning in a fire, but it wasn't destroyed. It wasn't consumed on its own. Say it, and you're done. The fever will go away. The fever will go away. Why? Because the fever stems. The reason why you got this fever is always because you gave away. You stopped keeping the Torah. You started hanging out with the other nations, and you started giving in to your taivas because you were with them. Started doing what you know you shouldn't be doing. Taiva burns like a fire within you. Burns like a burning fire within you, and that's the fever that's burning on you. That fever is something that's burning. You got to do this. You got to do that. It's making you want to do something. So in order to get rid of it, what you got to say is that, no, I'm going to exchange the fire of my fever for the fire of Torah. The fire of my taiva within me for the fire of Torah. And then he can say the following. If the Torah is boer boesh, the sna is boer boesh, then asna inedu ukol. The esha taiva will never be destroyed. And the esha taiva will, I should say, inedu ukol will not be able to consume me, will not be able to destroy me and take me down. That's the idea behind it. That's what we're referring to with the sna. And that's really what's going on over here. Mind in Shemitah until Har Sinai, there are some mitzvos like Shemitah. There are some mitzvos like Shemitah in which you think to yourself, you know, nobody's going to go anywhere near me because of it. No one's ever going to come anywhere near me. It makes no sense. Something like, I don't know, kosher. You know, where we're saying like, well, it's a health thing and it's this and that. Other nations might start following us. Something like, okay, we're going to wear our own special clothing. Or we're going to wear this special clothing that we're going to have. Other nations might follow us and might go ahead and do it. Different mitzvahs that are out there, like korbanos. We're going to go ahead and sacrifice certain things to Hashem. Other nations might say, oh, that's a great idea for our guys. They'll copy our mitzvahs and keep it for themselves. But Shemitah, they would never do. What's Shemitah all about? 6 years of work. And then the seventh year, you don't do anything for a full year. If you're a farmer, you can't do a thing. If you're a gardener, think of those gardeners in Eretz Yisrael. Can't do a thing all year long. Not a single thing for those gardeners to do. And they still have it today. They still have these gardeners today that are going out there doing absolutely nothing. They're doing absolutely nothing. Think about these guys that are going out there and doing absolutely nothing. The shot behind that is that no nation would ever choose that law for themselves. There's no nation that has ever made this law or that ever will make this law. Lay your land fallow for a full year so that you can learn all the laws that you need to know for the rest of the years. So that you can spend a year learning. You can spend a year doing whatever you need to do. There's no place. There is no place out there that actually does that. No place. Why? Because the guy knows it's ridiculous. What are we going to do about our money? We're going to lose all our money. We're going to lose this. We're going to lose that. They get all upset about stuff like that. How in the world could we live our lives that way? How can we live our lives that way? In that case, you would think to yourself, Ma inyan Shemitah itzel Har Sinai. What does Shemitah have to do with Har Sinai? Har Sinai was given for us to separate from the Goyim. So for us to separate from this, that they hate us, we hate them, so that we're separated from them, so we'll be able to keep the Torah. But Shemitah, we'll be able to keep this mitzvah, even if we didn't have Har Sinai. If we didn't have that hatred, because no one would go anywhere near us if we had that. We'd go up to somebody would say to me, why do you keep Shemitah? I don't know. They say, you're an idiot. They're going to stay far away from us. So why is Shemitah by Har Sinai? And to that we tell you, because everything is from Har Sinai. The Hashem gave you everything from Har Sinai. Not only were the laws that we understand should be in Har Sinai there, but all these laws, even Shemitah was there. That's the idea behind it. The Ramban says, a sod gadol. When you hear sod gadol, the first thing you think of is Kabbalah. First thing you think of is Kabbalah, especially when quoted by the Ramban. So that's awesome. I sat there and I read this Ramban. He said, sod gadol. Finally going to become on the level of Demi Moore and Madonna. I'm going to finally be able to understand all these different things, be able to understand all these Kabbalistic concepts, because I'm getting this Ramban right now. I'm ready for it. I'm going into it. Let's go. He says, just like Shabbos was given to us, so too Shemitah was given to us. That's what he said. I was quite upset. I was quite upset until I realized, this is very interesting. Shemitah is every what year?
Seven.
Shabbos is every what day?
Seven.
Wow. Appears on a 7-7. Why do we have Shabbos? I would ask you, why do we keep Shabbos? Why do we keep Shabbos? Because why? Day of rest. Very good. That's exactly what I wanted to hear, actually. A day of rest. That's absolutely wrong. And let me give you an example why. You'd think, like, I had a long work week. 6 days of work. I worked for 6 days straight. So now I need a day of rest. I got to rest. I got to chill out. I got to have the weekend to make up for my previous week because I just had a terrible, terrible week. I need Shabbos to just rest, chill out, to do whatever I need to do. It's not true. It's not true. It's the exact opposite. Shabbos is going to give you the strength to overcome the next week. The holiness that you get that permeates your body on Shabbos gives you enough holiness to be able to survive the next upcoming week. It's not that you survive the week on your own and therefore you deserve a day of rest. Because if that were true, you wouldn't have to go to Minyan. Why bother going to Shacharis? You deserve a day of rest. Do whatever you want to do. You want to play we at that time? Go ahead. You want to go ahead and drive around? Go ahead. If you want to do anything you want, you should be able to do it. There shouldn't be any laws about Shabbos. It's not that way. It's a way of infusing more Kedusha within you so you can survive your upcoming week of Gehenna in Olam Hazeh. So you can survive your upcoming week when you're working so hard during the rest of the week, whether you're in school, whether you're working, whether you're doing anything, you'll be able to survive that upcoming week. Now that is an unbelievable line. The exact same thing applies by Shemitah. It's not a question of you worked 6 years and now you got to let your land rest. It's that if you let your land rest, then you'll be able to work your land for 6 years. Then you'll be able to let your land be able to do that. That's why it says, "V'shavsa aretz Shabbos laHashem." Your land will rest a Shabbos to Hashem, and then "Sheishanim tizras edecha v'sheishanim tizmor karmecha." Then you'll be able to work your land for 6 years. It's only after you have Shemitah that you can go ahead and work on your land. Because normally, 6 years is a long time to work on land. I don't know if anybody's been in the bottom of the Museum of Science and Industry lately. You go in the bottom of the Museum of Science and Industry, there's like a lunch room and everything. They have a machine down there. It's right by one of the mummies. The machine is what you would do if you were a farmer. And it gives you choices. What do you want to plant in your field? So you can plant, right? So I made some good decisions. I decided, you know, I'm going to do it. I'm playing this machine. It was 4 years ago, I believe. I played the machine, and I pressed in. I was going to grow wheat in my field. So the machine, you know, does the thing. I pressed wheat, you know, instead of like barley and oats and rye and, you know, cotton and all these things and everything. And it said, congratulations, you have made $300,000 in this fiscal year. Way to go. Now you have a choice to do what to do next year. What do you want to do this next year? So I choose wheat again. Congratulations, you have made $600,000 over the past two fiscal years. You have made a lot of money. What do you want to do with your next year? So I'm going for it. I'm going for gold, baby. That's it. Now press wheat again. And you have just lost all your money. Like, why? So they said, do you want to know why on the bottom? So I'm like, yeah. Preston, do you want to know why? Yes. It said, because if you grow wheat in your fields 3 years in a row, your field, the ground, the nutrients are all used up into the wheat. So the third year, it won't grow as well. It'll be a disgusting crop. The whole crop will fail, and you'll lose everything. What you got to do is alternate crops. You got to do wheat 1 year, cotton another year, lay fallow a third year. Then you got to do wheat, then barley, and then you go a third year. And you keep going. So you might not make as much money, but in the end, you'll make a lot more money. In the long run, you'll make a lot more money. So I was good for those first 2 years, but I ruined the ground. Says the Rambam, it's a guarantee if you keep Shemitah, then you'll be guaranteed six straight years on your field. Normally, six straight years is impossible. They'll never be able to do it, especially without the nutrient regrowing stuff that we have nowadays. They never had that back then. There's no way you'd be able to grow 6 years in a row. But they could if you kept Shemitah. That was the promise that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving them. Keep it, and then you'll get there. It's the exact same reason. Just like on Shabbos, we need the spiritual reawakening to be able to take the next 6 days, so too by Shemitah. You need the spiritual reawakening to keep the next 6 years. You know what people do on Shabbos? What they're supposed to do? Learn all day long. There was a minhag back then in Klal Yisrael to learn all night long. People used to go to Maariv, went home for the meal, and then went back to Shul and learned all night long till Shacharis. They davened Vasikin, and then they went home and they slept during the day. Maybe they got up for a little lunch in between. They had to have a Shabbos lunch, they had to have a Shabbos meal in between. But they knew what Shabbos was. Shabbos is not just a day where we sleep 16, 18 hours a day, which is impressive, but you go ahead and you sleep every single hour of the day that you're not eating or davening during that time. No, it's not made for that. It's made for learning. That's the whole point of it. To spiritually reawaken you, not to rest. That's the idea behind it. And so too Shemitah. These farmers that are out there that they're collecting for all over with these Karen Hashvis and everything like that. These farmers that are out there that are going and do this. It's unbelievable what these guys are doing. They're in Kolel. Look at the pictures of these guys. I want you to take a look at the picture of the guy outside on the wall. You know, like Karen Hashvis. It'll show a big picture of a rabbi. Then a big picture of some guy. Mamish looks like he just came off the boat. Like he's wearing, like he looks dirty. He looks like he never took a shower in his life. That's what he looks like. You look at him, you're just like, whoa. That guy's crazy. He's a farmer. The guy's in Kollel all day long now. He's not doing anything but learning. And we're paying for him with all the money that we give within Keren HaShemesis for him to learn all day long. For him to learn. Instead of working during this year, he gets to spiritually reawaken himself. Chilonim finally have a year where if they go ahead and keep Shemitah, they'll start learning about the Torah that they never knew about before. They never knew about this stuff before. They never realized what was there. Now we have a full year that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is able to give you an ability to spiritually reawaken yourself. It's an unbelievable concept. That's what he means. And I'll give you a remez. Number one, the first person to do this is Adam Rishon. Why? Here's the proof. Adam Rishon was born when? On the sixth day, midday. You think he needed a rest by that night? Man, it's been a crazy 6 hours. Crazy 6 hours. I gotta rest now. Now that, of course he didn't need to rest. But what was the point of Shabbos? Because after he sinned, he needed to be spiritually reawakened to survive the upcoming week. He wouldn't have survived. He had Shabbos before the week started. And so to us, it's always Shabbos before the week starts. That's the idea. That's number one. Hold on 1 second. The second thing that we're going to give, it's all remnants to the world. How long is the world supposed to survive for? How long? We know until the year 6000. We're in 5768 right now. And the way Chazal tell us, the world is supposed to be 6000 years. At the end of those 6000 years is the 7000th year, 7000th cycle. We're supposed to be Yom Shekulo Aruch, Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbos, the day that's all Shabbos, the day that's all Olam Haba, the greatest thing that's out there. The first 6000 years are work. The 7000th year is not rest. It's a spiritual reawakening for whatever's supposed to happen after that, which we don't know. Which we don't know what it's going to be. Hold on, Joey, yeah, what were we going to ask?
Isn't it a problem for a non-Jew to keep Shabbos?
Yes.
Adam HaRishon is non-Jew, correct?
Oh, no. There is an idea behind a non-Jew not keeping Shabbos, but before Matan Torah, that wasn't necessarily true. Shabbos was a concept that everybody could understand, especially before the Mabul. That gets into a whole other thing. But it's a good question, why are Goyim not privy to that? And that has to do with what we said, Mayin and Shemitah is Har Sinai, because Shemitah is a concept that even they can understand, that even they should do. They should also be able to survive the week. Why don't they get it? Har Sinai. That's the mitzvah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give us specifically as a nation, to give us a gift and not them. To give us a gift and not them. Yeah. Paul.
What happens after the 7,000th year, though?
We don't know. We need that 7,000 years in order to somehow figure out what's going to be afterward. We don't know. We don't know, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu realized, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what we need for it. That's the idea behind it.
Our calendar is you said 5768. Okay, so it doesn't matter. When we created our calendar, how do we know that it's exactly from the birth of the world? We don't know for sure. We have an approximation.
The world is 5,768 years old.
Without any question.
You heard it here first. Oh, you probably heard it here like 750th.
Wow.
But yeah, 5,768. I don't think that's a chiddush. That's not a chiddush. That's not a chiddush. That's 100% true. I'm sorry? Rav Schwab brings up the whole thing of 190 years between the second base of Mikdash, because there's issues with the second base of Mikdash. But that does, for all intents and purposes, it's 5,768 years old. Yeah.
Why is it called Yom HaShviti?
That's really the point behind Shabbos. I think we all somewhat understand. Shabbos was the last day of the days of creation. But for Adam, no, 100%. For Hashem. But it's not a rest. He stopped working. It's a seventh day for Hashem, but it's the first day for us. The first day for people. He doesn't need it, though. We need it. He doesn't need the chill out day. That's interesting to him. But listen to this. Ramata, was anybody at the Aguda convention this past year? Everybody here, right? So everybody here was there. Good. So at that Aguda convention, Ramatzio Solomon spoke about Shemitah. He spoke about Shemitah. He said, there's two gifts that you get through Shemitah. One is spiritual, one is physical. The spiritual gift, in Eretz Yisrael, it's easy to understand. You sit and you learn for a year, as we just said. What about Chutz Laretz? This Shemitah year, what are we gaining out of Shemitah? What do we get out of this Shemitah year here in Chutz Laretz, outside of Eretz Yisrael? So listen to this. It says, the pshat is that you learn from Shemitah that when you have free time, use it for God. If for some reason you have a vacation, use it for Him. Don't use it for anything else. I realize we all need some type of vacation where we got to chill out and do absolutely nothing. Kadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us that when you do that, make sure you give a part back to God. For example, I'll give this example over here. For some reason, a Kadosh Baruch Hu put in the heads of the nations of the world, or the nations of America, I should say, to give us Sundays. Lots of how Solomon said. What do we do with a Sunday? What do we do with a Sunday? We have a full day. We don't have to work. We don't have to go to school. We don't have to do anything that we would have to do in any other time. We have a full day. How do you use it? Do you use it for learning? Or to use it for doing absolutely nothing? If you do it for absolutely nothing, you're not taking on the mitzvah of Shemitah. You're losing the whole mitzvah of Shemitah. The whole idea of Shemitah is you have a day off, use some of it for God. Use part of it for God. Obviously, you need stuff for yourself, you use it for yourself. You don't need a full day of Sunday, you just got Shabbos to all yourself. You probably slept 18 hours on Shabbos. Then on Sunday, you think you can take the whole day and just waste the entire day? It's important to be with family. It's important to rest. It's important to go do all the things that you need to do in your house that you weren't able to do during the rest of the week. But it's important to learn also. What are you doing the first couple hours in the day? Why aren't you learning for those first couple hours or the last couple hours or all the stuff in between? You have all that time. Why in the world is something different? In the winter when there's football on, okay, I can somewhat understand. But even then, what are you doing until 12? Nothing starts. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put in the minds of Roger Goodell and all the other people of the NFL not to start the NFL before 12 o'clock. Unbelievable. Well, you could say because they wouldn't be able to play so early. Come on. The NFL players can get up that early. You don't think they get up at 9? But who put it in their heads that pre-games would be boring so that you could actually spend the time until 12 o'clock starts. You could actually do something with it. You could actually do something about it. And not just sleep until 12 o'clock. You just slept 18 hours over Shabbos. It's an unbelievable concept. But of course, we waste it. We waste it. It's a waste of time. That's number one. That's our spiritual reawakening that we can realize in ourselves every single day from Shemitah. That's number one. Number two is a crazy pasuk. The Chassam Sofer says this pasuk, and we'll get into the Baba Sali from this. The Chisomu, when you say, my what will we eat in the seventh year? We're not going to plant. We're not going to gather in our grain. What are we going to do? Can you imagine a pasuk like this? Hashem is telling you what you're going to say, and it's very likely what you're going to say. We can't do this. What are we going to do? I will give you my bracha in the sixth year. And the grain will grow for 3 years. Your grain will grow for 3 years. You will have a bumper crop in that sixth year. It'll work not only for the sixth year, it'll be for the seventh year, and it'll be for the eighth year as well. Says the Chassam Sofer, what kind of a messed up promise is that? And what if it doesn't? What if I look at my sixth year crops and I say, it's not enough? I don't have to keep Shemitah? But Shemitah's right now. Hashem says, I will give you enough to be able to survive Shemitah. So let's say I didn't have enough. Let's say Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't give me enough. I have my regular crop. I don't have to keep Shemitah. Of course I got to keep Shemitah. But the Pasuk promises me, before Shemitah starts, you will have a bumper crop. Now it happens to be, there are statistics out. You can check it out. Keren Hashvi'is has them all. There's a whole website online that has everything. There always are bumper crops in the sixth year in Eretz Yisrael. Always. They've done the studies for the past 4 Shemitah cycles. Every single one, the sixth year is a bumper crop. Every single time. It's double, 1.7 times as much as whatever it is. There's always bumper crops. That's number one. That it is 100%. But 3 times as much. How in the world? And should I be able to keep it? If it doesn't happen, should I just not keep it? Should I just not do it? Says the Chassam Sofer, no. You know what you got to do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says the following. You still got to have bitachon. You still got to trust me. Take all the grain that you made and don't count it. Take all the grain and fill up your silos. And when you need grain, keep going in your silo and pulling stuff out. Never count how much grain is left. Never look how much grain is left. Says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, I promise you, you will have enough to survive the next 3 years. Yeah, no matter how much you think I'm going to need for the next 3 years, I guarantee you, says Hashem, you will have enough. You'll survive. But don't count it. That's what the Chassam Sofer says. The way to explain something like that, we'll have to use an example with the Baba Sali. Baba Sali, we all know, the famous Sephardi rabbi who passed away, Rabbi Yisrael Abu Chatzera. Rabbi Yisrael was very well known. He used to make farbrengen. Farbrengen in which he would party. He would have a party and he'd make siyumim and everything like that. And he used to make siyumim all the time. He finished shas every half a year. Baba Sali was a crazy, crazy person. So what he used to do is he used to have hundreds of people over and he used to go around with one bottle of whiskey and he'd start pouring. And when it was halfway finished, he would take a little cloth, put it around the bottle of whiskey and keep pouring. And pour, and pour, and pour, and pour for every single person there. This happened numerous times. times, where the Bubba Sally poured out of one bottle of schnapps without any little wire that was going through his arm or anything like that, out of one bottle of schnapps was able to pour for every single person in the room. Out of one little bottle. How? Because if you don't count it and you don't see it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can give you a bracha that will just continue going and going and going and going. It's a crazy miracle, but it's something that's more recent. The Bubba Sally lived, he died in 1986. This is not something from 500 years ago. This is something from almost 20 years ago. 22 years ago, to be exact. Bubba Sally did this all the time. His son, Rabbeinu Meir, did something very, very similar with his stuff as well. He used to always tell people, don't check your bank accounts. I knew somebody that did this. Put money in the bank account, never check it. Keep taking out as much money as you need. Don't take out more than you need. Don't go buy yourself a fish tank with that money. Don't go buy yourself, you know, extra stuff that you don't really necessarily need. Go and take money when you need it out of the bank account. Put in as much money as you can. Don't count it. Don't look at the bank statements. Don't look at anything. It'll be okay. People are made to this. They say it 100% works. They just don't count. They never get statement. Well, they don't check their statements. They don't know if they're overdrawn. But apparently, they say it always works. That there's nothing. They never have anything wrong. They're never overdrawn. The banks never say anything to them. Somehow the money is there, even though naturally there's no way that it's there. I don't know if it's a bank mistake or this or that. Who knows how it happens? Who knows how it happens? But a Kadosh Baruch Hu has very, very good abilities of letting everything happen in the right way. Letting everything happen in the right way, not to steal from other people and give it to you. That's the idea behind it. And Shemitah is the same way. Put it in your silo. Don't count it. I guarantee you it'll be enough. Cover up your cholent. That way you don't have to get up and get more cholent when you get out here. You can just cover up your cholent and keep eating. It'll just keep going over and over and over again. If you have that bitachon, I guarantee you your Shemitah year will be okay. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was promising. Can you imagine, though, what kind of a promise that is for the people who didn't hear that yet? Just, you get up there. Moshe, let's just say, Moshe Rabbeinu would have written the Torah by himself. If he would have written himself without God. Can you imagine that kind of a promise that you're promising your people? Can you imagine that? If I was getting up and I was telling everybody over here, I promise you, you're going to reach into your pocket tonight, you're going to find a $5 bill. And if you don't, then they're going to say to me, you're a liar. So do with Moshe Rabbeinu. How could he have made this promise? He would have been found to be the biggest liar in the world. So you know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu must have been involved. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling him what to say over here.
He wasn't there anyways when they got here.
That's true also, but he didn't know that yet.
He has to worry about it.
But no, he didn't know that yet. He didn't know. But those are the two things. There's a spiritual reawakening that we got from Shemitah and a physical reawakening that we got from Shemitah. That's on the Chassam Sofer. Okay, we got another thing. How much time we have? Okay, we have a little bit of time over here. Ribbis. We know it's usher to take ribbis from Jews. Interest. You can't take interest. You can't give them $100 and get $120 back. But you are allowed to give interest to a goy. Chof Hei Lamed Vav says, Chof Hei Lamed Vav, the Pasuk says the following. It says, Al Tikach Meito Neshach Vesarbis, Yoresa Melokecha, Vechei Achicha Imach. Don't take from him interest and let your brother live with you. But that means it's mutter by non-Jews. Why is it mutter by non-Jews? Well, we have to understand why it's usher. Listen to this Kli Yakar. The Kli Yakar says, you know why it's usher to give it to Jews, to go ahead and get interest from Jews? Because when you go ahead and put money in the stock market, do you know, no, by Jews, why are you not allowed to give it to Jews? Thank you very much. When you go ahead and you put money in the stock market, do you know you're going to make money? In fact, do you know you're not going to make money nowadays? You know you're not going to make anything, unless you put it in commodities and natural gas, maybe. You know you're not going to make money otherwise. There's nothing, right? But if you put it in, you're going to still have to daven to God that your investments pay off. If you make investments in certain types of nursing homes or certain homes or anything like that, you still got to daven, you got to pray and say, God, please make sure that my investment pays off. But interest is not that way. By interest, you give $100, you know where the guy lives, you're going to get the $125 back. You're not going to call the guy, you're not going to have to do anything. It's like automatic free money. I don't even have to daven to God, please God, please let him give the money back to me. It's like automatic. I'm going to get the money back. I'm going to get my money back. Because everybody is somewhat trustworthy. You know where the guy lives. You know who that guy is. So you think you're going to get the money back. You have a business deal that doesn't involve God. That's interest. That's usher. That's what we don't allow you to do. But by non-Jews, it's mutter. Why? Because by non-Jews, you're never guaranteed to get the money back. Because by non-Jews, you never know what they're going to do. I know that sounds racist. I said this and that. You got to remember what the Jews were like back then. The Jews were the banks, but quite often they were messed over by the nations that were among them. And by ribbis, by non-Jews, it's not guaranteed. You still got to daven. Hashem, don't only let me make money. Let me get my money back. Let me not lose money on this deal. It's like you're putting money into the stock market. So you're still davening. That type of a business deal you're allowed to do. And therefore, ribbis is mutter by goyim. Therefore, ribbis would be mutter by somebody who's out there. Now listen to this. The Baal HaTorim says Neshech is the gematria of 370. 370 is the same gematria. Neshech is the interest. Neshech is the same gematria as Zeh Nachash. This is the Nachash, the snake. You know what the snake is? The snake goes ahead and it bites you. Let's say it's a poisonous snake. The cobra goes up to you, the king cobra goes up to you and it bites you. Puts two teeth right there. The poison slowly but surely goes into the bloodstream and spreads throughout the entire body till it paralyzes you and finally it kills you. But it's slow but sure. It starts just over here and then it goes straight through all the way through your body, all the way through. That's what Neshech is all about. Neshech literally means a bite. It's the bite of the Nachash. It's the bite of the snake. It's like the snake is going ahead and biting you and putting it through your system, and that's what ribbis is. You don't realize it at first, but what do you think credit card debt is? You start borrowing money from the credit card companies, then all of a sudden it goes up and up. You have to borrow a little bit more, then it goes up and up more, and you start going worse and worse. It's like a snake bite. It's exactly what it is. It's like somebody bit you, then all of a sudden, what in the world? What's with the swelling? Why is it so big? How in the world did my $100 credit card bill all of a sudden become $300? I remember, it just happened to me not too recently. I got a ticket, a parking ticket. It was by Devon. There's like, I never knew that there were those parking meters by Devon right off there. Not on Devon itself, but off Devon on one of those side streets. I didn't realize that there were those, I don't know, around there, there's these parking meters. I didn't even realize they were there. I just ran out of my car. I had to go to Rosenblum's, ran over to Rosenblum's, came back, there's a ticket on my car. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. $30 ticket. So I went and I was going to pay it. I forgot. I put it away, right? Then I came back, like, a couple months later, I'm, like, cleaning out my stuff, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I never paid my parking ticket. I go online, and I'm like, okay, I type it in. I'm like, I told my wife, I'm like, I got to pay 30. All of a sudden, doubled. Doubled. And they said I had 3 more days until they tripled it. Until they tripled, they were going to make it $120. They're going to make it $120. I'm like, I couldn't believe it. All of a sudden, it's like a snake bite. All of a sudden, it's swollen, and it keeps going up and up and up.
$90.
No. Doubled, meaning doubled off the 30, and then doubled off the 60, which is, I know, I called it tripled. You can not, don't be medayik in my words. Never be. I'm not a Rishon. By the way, ended up being that. It's, you don't even realize it, but it's a snake bite. That's what Neshech is all about. You don't even realize what you're doing to that guy. You're making him, it's like credit card debt. It's so similar to credit card debt. That's what happens. Rabbi Kiva Eger. Oh, and by the way, that's a shot. The Nachash. What happened to the Nachash? It was punished. And the Nachash was punished that what? That it would never, ever be fixed for the rest of its life. And even in Olam Haba, the Nachash will never get its ability to speak and its legs back ever again. Nachash will never get them back. The snake will remain on the ground and will remain eating dust for the rest of its life. Why? Because in the Pasuk in the Torah where the Nachash is cursed, it says the words Kol Yemei Chayecha, all the days of your life. From the Haggadah, Yemei Chayecha Olam Hazeh, Kol Yemei Chayecha Lirbos Yemos HaMashiach, to include the days of Mashiach. Even the days of Mashiach, the Nachash will remain the way it is. Says Chazal, a guy who does ribbis will never have Tchiyas HaMeisim. If you give somebody interest, if you go up a dollar, go up to a guy, here's a dollar, pay me back $1.25. You go out and you do it with interest. Even if the guy comes up to you and says, give me a dollar, I'll give you $1.25 back. You do that, no Olam Haba. You will never be reawakened, you're gone. For the rest of your life, you're gone. For the rest of your life, for the rest of your death, you're gone. There's nothing you can do about it. Famous story. There was a guy who was buried in Rabbi Kiva's town, near Rabbi Kiva Eger's town in Posen, right near Posen. This guy was known as a very big miser, never gave tzedakah money. He was also known as a malva beribis. He lent people money with interest. Not only non-Jews, but Jews themselves as well. He lent everybody with interest. He gave interest to everybody. When he died, the Chavra Kedisha did not want him buried in the burial grounds. Chavra Kedisha said, this guy's not going to get, you know, he's a nobody. So they said, we don't want him buried over here. here. So they charge an exorbitant amount, a huge amount, to be able to get this guy to be buried there. You know, 12 times the amount that it would normally cost to bury a person. So the family of this guy who died took him to court. Took the Chevra Kedisha to court. Meanwhile, the dead guy is staying outside, obviously rotting, but they took him to court. They took the Chevra Kedisha to court and they said, alright, we're bringing you to court, we're going to make sure that he gets buried in the regular Jewish cemetery. Went to the court, not Beis Din, to the secular courts. So secular courts were furious. How could you refuse? How could you charge this guy more than a regular burial plot? Okay, he was a bad guy in his lifetime, but in his death he deserves the same burial place as everybody else. Rabbi Akiva Eger was called in. Rabbi Akiva Eger was brought in the stand and he made the following argument. He said, in fact, a burial spot which the person acquires forever should cost $1,000 more than what we're charging. It should cost millions of more dollars. You're getting this plot of land forever, till the end of time. Do you know how much that should cost? Houses that we buy nowadays are for whatever, 50 years, 60 years, however much it's going to be. But this guy's buying this burial spot for life. He's keeping it for life. It should always cost that much. Why do we charge so little for these burial spots? Why do we only charge a certain amount that's not so expensive? Because we know it's not forever. Because we know these guys are going to have tchias amesin, they're going to be live again, and therefore they're not getting the spot for life. They're only getting for temporary dwellings. It's like they're renting. It's like they're renting. If they would buy it, it would cost them an exorbitant amount. But they're renting, so it costs a little bit amount. This guy, however, is permanent because he lent other people with interest. And our rabbis tell us that this person will not come up ever again. He's buying a permanent residence. Just like rental fees are less than permanent residences, so too, this guy is going to have to pay a permanent resident fee. So he's got to pay an exorbitant amount, much more than other people would pay. The judge loved it. The judge said, that's the greatest, most innovative thing I've ever heard before in my life. 100%, you got to charge him. They tried appealing it. It didn't get appealed. They buried him. They had to charge the enormous amount. That's the shot. It's a crazy little thing to think about, that a guy who lent with ribbis never, ever comes back up. You remember the stories that we had before? Get him. How do you fix it? You give the money back. Yeah, that's a problem.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Alright, this is not a tshuva shir. I don't want to deal with tshuva right now. I just want to go into the sins. Let's go into this. At the end of the parsha, it says the following. When the gerim and the toshavim, the goyim among you, become rich, and your brother becomes poor, the Jews become poor. If the non-Jews around you become very rich and you become poor, the nimkar la ger toshav imach, he's sold for the ger toshav among you, ola eger, mishpachas ger, or to the eger, the family of goyim. What does la eger mean? Rashi says you're sold to avodah zarah. You're a meshamish for avodah zarah. How low can you get to be a shamish for avodah zarah? You're a water carrier and a wood chopper for avodah zarah? I mean, that's low. You can't get much lower than that. What else could you be sold as? Working for a goy, okay, that's one thing. Working for avodah zarah, how could you possibly have thought that was, how could you sell yourself that way? Another thing. There are four different types of people mentioned in the pasuk. Number one is ger. Ger refers to a ger. A nice Jew, whatever, a ger, a guy who joined our nation from the other nations. Toshav is referring to a guy who lives among us, wants to become a ger, but is not a ger just yet. A ger Toshav is a little bit further off. He's a ger Toshav who lives around Eretz Yisrael, but not exactly. The fourth guy is an Eker. Eker we know is way far off. They're terrible. Absolutely terrible. Says the Rabbeinu Bechaya, those four refer to the four nations of the world that enslaved us. The four exiles that we were in this world. Listen to this medrash. The medrash says, you know who Nebuchadnezzar was? It's a medrash, Eim Kol Chai, Perek Chav Gimel. I tried finding it. It's in a sefer called Bate Midrashos. It was printed not too long ago. It's found in the Midrashim in the Gniza in Cairo. I don't have the sefer at my house, so I didn't look it inside, but I saw it quoted. The Rabbeinu Bechaya quotes this down. There's a medrash that says Nebuchadnezzar was the son or the grandson of Shlomo HaMelech and the Queen of Sheba. and Malchus Sheva. It's an unbelievable medrash. That means Nebuchadnezzar was technically a ger. He was a Jew that wasn't exactly a Jew. Malchus Sheva had a questionable gerus, questions about what she did. Because of that, that child that was born was Nebuchadnezzar, who ended up leading the exile of Babel, and that was ger. Toshav, when it refers to Toshav, that refers to Paras and Madai, because Paras and Madai brought us back to Eretz Yisrael. They brought us back and helped us rebuild the second base of Mikdash with Darius II after Achashverosh was killed. That was Darius II, that's Toshav. Ger Toshav was Yavon, Greece. Because Greece, we know, we were living in Eretz Yisrael when Greece took us over. We still had the base of Mikdash, and Greece was in charge of us. Greece was the one that were in charge of the base of Mikdash. Eker is Rome. And Eker is the worst one. Eker is by far the worst one. This whole thing is all brought down in order to give us a little bit of an awakening and to make us think that we can still get something out of it. Because at the end it says, Acharei Nimkar, after you're sold, Gula Tielo. You will be redeemed, promises HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yes, you've been through a lot. You've been through Nebuchadnezzar, you went through Paros HaMadah, you went through Yavan, you went through Edom. And Edom has been 2,000 years already. I know you've been through a lot. But Acharei Nimkar, after, and Acharei is always Muflag, Acharei Nimkar, after you were sold, Gula Tielo. You will be redeemed, I guarantee it, says Hashem. Don't worry. You'll be okay in the end. It's just going to take a little bit while till we get there. By who? Look at the next pasuk. O Dodo, O Ben Dodo. Either your uncle or the son of your uncle. Now, great. Why not say your brother? Why not say your father? Your great, your son? Anybody else? Your uncle? The word Dodo, aside from referring to a bird that's flightless, also refers to the letters of David. David HaMelech. O Ben Dodo, or Ben David. As Samach David Avdecha Satzmiach. That's what we're referring to. We're referring to Mashiach. Ben David will come by, and that's Acharei Nimkar Geula Tielo. Echad Me'achov Yigol, and one of your brothers is going to redeem you. Not, the Rebbeinu Bachai says this very carefully, one of your brothers, not a guy who claims to be a son of God and is not one of your brothers. One of your brothers will be the Mashiach. Unbelievable, Rebbeinu Bachai. One of your brothers will be Mashiach. And who is that? O Dodo, Ben Dodo, one of the, either David HaMelech himself will come back, or Ben David, the son of David HaMelech, Mashiach himself will come back and will save his Yigalenu. That's what we're going on over here. That's what it refers to over here. That's a tremendous little thing over here. But there's another remnant. This is how we're going to end off. Avodah Zarah. How in the world could a guy be sold that far down to Avodah Zarah? So Rav Wolfson, got to end off with a Rav Wolfson. Rav Wolfson says an unbelievable thing. When a person's neshama is so caught in the klipos of the world, if you got involved with the other nations of the world, you brought yourself to such a level that you can't tell, nobody can tell that you're a Jew. People look at you and say, you're not Jewish. People look at you and say, there's no way that guy's Jewish. They can't even tell that you're Jewish. At that point, your soul, your neshama, is so surrounded by klipos. Sometimes, the only way to pull him out from there, to get him to be better, to get him to be a real Jew, a good Jew again, a guy who's proud of his Judaism, and will walk around as a true Jew and be proud of his Judaism, and say aloud, I am a Jew, even though we'll be embarrassed, and even though we'll be degraded, and even though we'll be killed. In order to get to that point, sometimes you gotta hit rock bottom. We know that by everything. I deal, unfortunately, with a lot of guys that are not doing so well drug-wise. Not doing so well. The only time that you can really affect a guy is when he hits that rock bottom. Sometimes even then it's not good enough. There's still a rock bottom below that. No matter how bad the drug is, no matter how bad he is into it, sometimes it gets much, much worse than that. It's crazy what people can do to themselves. Anybody heard of roboing? I'll talk about this later. Regardless, the fact is, there's crazy stuff that these people can do. Crazy stuff. Sometimes when you hit that rock bottom, until he hits that rock bottom, it's like, I'm fine. I can do as much as I want. I'm going to be okay. I can hit myself up once a night. It'll be fine. I can go out and smoke once a night, and it's fine. It's fine. I'll be fine about it. And I don't just mean smoke pot, which is bad enough in itself, but just worse than that. I go, I'll be fine. I just can do it once in a while, and I'll be okay. You got to hit rock bottom. Because until that point, the guy's convinced himself he's okay. But when he's rolling around in the street, completely gone, not realizing where he is, his parents don't want him back. He's got to go to this... these rehabilitation centers, when he hits rock bottom, that's where all of a sudden, oh, I'm going to come back now. Now I realize the error of my ways, the fall of my follies. Now I realize what's wrong. Something you got to hit rock bottom. When you're not there yet, if you're just acting like someone who's not Jewish, you're just going around pretending that you're not Jewish, not telling anybody that you're Jewish. If you're going around doing that, you don't realize the error of your ways. You don't realize how bad you are until you start worshiping Avodah Zarah, until you start working for Avodah Zarah. That, Rav Wolfson says, when you get there, that's the only time you can be redeemed. Until that point, everybody could come up to you, I'll help you, I want to help you, I want to do something for you, I'll do anything I can. You say, like, I don't need any help. I don't need your help. You don't have to help me. What do I need help for? But when you're all the way in the bottom, you're working for Avodah Zarah. Sometimes that has to happen. Sometimes it's a ger. Sometimes it's a toshav. Sometimes it's a ger toshav. Sometimes you have to go all the way down to Acre. Sometimes the guy's neshama is so caught in the mire, so caught in the muck, so caught in all the garbage out there. The only way to pull him out is for him to hit the rock bottom and have to be pulled out because he can't bring himself up anymore. He can't pull himself up. See that guy drowning? It's like a crazy muscle. But that guy drowning, you know, for the first couple minutes, he's like going up, bobbing himself up, bobbing himself up. He doesn't need help yet. But when he's going down and sinking down, 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 and there's no way for him to bring himself back up, that's when you got to put your hand in and pull him back out. That's Laker. That's what Rav Wolfson says. Sometimes that's the best thing that ever happens to a guy. The best thing that ever happens to a guy. Tremendous lesson from Laker. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a great Shabbos.